everybody, and welcome to another episode of Tales from a Vet Tech with me, Tabitha Cusera. Today, I am speaking to veterinary technician specialist extraordinaire Steven Sattell all about one of his favorite topics, cannabis. We're going to be covering what is cannabis, practical applications of cannabis for animal care, and also what veterinarians should know. There is so much misinformation about CBD and cannabinoids. So I'm so stoked to have him on to chat all about it. I hope you guys enjoy. Hi, Steven. I am so stoked to have you here. We're going to definitely already have you back to talk about other topics. But today we are talking about cannabis with the amazing trailblazer, veterinary technician, all of the things. He knows. Steven Sattell, welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me. Was that a pun when you said trailblazer with this topic today?
I love a horrible dad joke pun. So yes.
Well, thank you for having me. As you know, this is a passion topic of mine, in addition to a few others. And there's a lot of misconceptions. And you being the behavior person, this is one of the areas where cannabis, I think, has a lot of the most misconceptions about its use and its effectiveness in our animal patients and friends and family.
100%. We're definitely going to get into that because, as Steven said, as a behavior professional there and from a marketing standpoint, it's really hard for consumers because the amount of CBD cannabis products that are sold that are essentially marketed to help decrease anxiety. Oh my God, it's like every other person and there's zero evidence and we'll get more into it and actually can be detrimental, but that doesn't mean that cannabis isn't an amazing tool that can be used in other aspects of animal care. So to get started, since not everyone may be familiar, what is cannabis?
So cannabis or Cannabis sativa linnaeus is the genus name for a plant species. And under that plant species, you have three common categories. You have hemp plants, you have marijuana plants, and you have what's known as ruderalis. Ruderalis is not something that we see a lot of products produced from here in the United States. It's often used like hemp in other countries. And it's kind of a mix of hemp and marijuana plants. Marijuana, that definition kind of depends on where you live, but within the United States, a marijuana plant is considered a plant with a delta-9 THC, so the molecule that gets you high, greater than 0.3% by dry weight in concentration, and a hemp plant has a federal, U.S. federal definition of having less than 0.3% THC by dry weight. So when we're looking at the law of things, of these types of things in the United States, at least, hemp has a very specific legal definition. And since 2018, it has been descheduled from the DEA scheduling. So it is no longer Schedule One with heroin and cocaine and all these
about
other
time, everybody.
Crazy drugs. However, marijuana technically still is, which is kind of interesting. Even though we have a number of states that have legalized recreational or medicinal cannabis. Cannabis, going back to that word, even though it's technically kind of a catch-all for any of these three plants, hemp, marijuana, or ruderalis plants, within the law, in the context of legislation, cannabis typically means marijuana. So I think I actually can't even recall if there's a state that actually uses cannabis in the same breath as hemp, because most states have done a very good job at delineating out cannabis versus hemp.
Awesome. Thank you. See, guys, it's way more complicated than just... And caregivers and everyone out there, this stuff is complicated. I understand it's marketed in a way. And unfortunately, marketing has caused a lot of myths and all that stuff. So as far as cannabis, what are some practical applications of cannabis for animal care? on how we have, of course, evidence-based and how it can be beneficial for the animals in our care.
So that's a little bit tricky.
It's a broad question, everybody. Very broad, to be fair.
I am biased. I am pro cannabinoid use. That's the word I like to use more than cannabis, because I think people get confused. Like if they come in the middle of the conversation and hear cannabis, they're like, "Oh, you're talking about weed or marijuana," and like, no. So I say cannabinoids, which are the specific molecules, things like CBD or THC that we can harvest from these plants. There's over 100 of them. So it's not just down to CBD and THC. But when we're talking about the medicinal use of these molecules from these plants, there is a decent amount in veterinary literature of information for its utility for things like chronic pain, in particular things like osteoarthritis. I believe there's 5, 6, maybe 7 studies now showing good efficacy of using CBD dominant or hemp products. So it's very CBD forward, in decreasing pain scores, which is good. In combination with conventional medications, so things like nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories, even opioids. So there is good evidence for that. There's a little bit of evidence. There's 2 studies now showing its utility, CBD's utility for decreasing severity and length of seizure activity in epileptic dogs that have pretty much failed on other anti-epileptic drugs. And there's a little bit of evidence that these compounds can also be beneficial for animals in under cancer treatment therapies. So chemotherapy, radiation therapy. Interestingly enough, if you were to go to cancer.gov, you will see a whole page on cannabis or cannabinoids and cancer treatment, which I think is really interesting. And it's actually all pretty pro, which is cool. And some of the human studies, we don't really have these studies in animals yet, are actually showing the addition of things like CBD with chemotherapy can possibly even decrease the amount of chemotherapy agent that one needs to actually take, which is very exciting, in addition to alleviating some of the unsatisfactory side effects related to chemotherapy. And on the cancer.gov website, you will also see a study cited showing that there's better outcomes when a human patient is taking CBD and undergoing radiation therapy, because CBD, for whatever reason, has a protective mechanism for healthy cells, but also will help kill those rogue mutated cells, i.e. cancer, more efficiently. So that's kind of exciting. When it comes to behavior, just because I feel like I have to put an emphasis on that with you, the 2 studies that we have in veterinary medicine right now, they suck. They're awful. And going back to the marketing that you were talking about, you know, there's a lot of interest in using CBD products for things like stress and anxiety in people, which of course people then want to apply to animals. Like anything, not just when it comes to cannabinoids, I think we also have to consider the placebo effect. Mm-hmm. The placebo effect is very real in people. In fact, I give my husband sugar pills when he thinks he has something going on, and the placebo effect works in people. The placebo effect does not work in animals, which is concerning. We have caregiver placebo, where we as a pet owner or the veterinary professional can offer a treatment of anything and think that that patient is doing better, but that's caregiver placebo, right? So we need these really good validated systems for scoring efficacy of things. And we don't have that when it comes to stress and anxiety in animals, for many and for a lot of other things, yes, other than just stress and anxiety. But the 2 studies that we have in veterinary medicine, one was, I think, out of, I think it was, is either Kentucky or Louisiana, one of those states that I don't often travel to anymore. The group took shelter dogs
Oh, I think, yes.
Did you read that, Stemmy?
Yes. Yeah. I will share it in the, I will probably not share it since it's not the best study, but I'll share the other studies he mentioned in the show notes so you guys don't have to search for them.
It was a study where they took shelter dogs and they wanted to see if, in fact, CBD would help with acclimatization to loud noises, you know, fireworks, sirens, etc. So they took these dogs out of the shelter, they acclimated them for 2 weeks, and then they put them essentially in a room and blasted loud noises at them, and then were assessing their behavior. They were also taking some blood to measure trazodone levels in combination with CBD. And basically this study, like I would assume it would, and I think there's a lot of variables that we have to consider. One, you're a behavior, like I'm not a behavior person, you're a behavior person, and even me as a non-behavior person, I know that taking an animal that was in a shelter and acclimating it for 2 weeks is bullshit. Like that, it does not happen that fast. Like it can take years for some animals to see a positive change in their behavior.
And how are they defining acclimate, right? Like that's a very important, and that's where behavior research honestly is more challenging. And we recognize that, but that doesn't mean that we should be seeing headlines in a vet magazine about a paper or a research study that wasn't done very well, which I tend to see sometimes with behavior.
So needless to say, that study was not very positive. It did show some interesting changes in serum trazodone levels, which I think we were all kind of aware of, because CBD in particular, the way it's metabolized in the liver, interacts or changes the production of certain enzymes in the CYP450, which can increase or decrease the concentrations of certain conventional medications, concentrations within the blood serum. Was it to the point that I would change anything? No, absolutely not. And then the other study that was more positive, but I wasn't like a huge success, was a study out of Italy where they had aggressive dogs. Again, I don't know what that definition technically is for those people, but these dogs were a little bit more aggressive or scared of the handlers, and they wanted to see what giving CBD would do for the animal's affect towards people. And they saw a positive change, a slight decrease in this fearfulness or this aggression towards the handlers, which is positive, and that's fine. But other than that, we don't have like really good literature. And when I try to tell people who are really interested in using CBD for things like stress and anxiety in dogs or cats, I really try to tell them that this is not a silver bullet, just like gabapentin and all these other stupid medications that we throw at animals all the time are not silver bullets. Like, and please correct me if I'm wrong, this is what I
know. I always joke with veterinary professionals and even clients, even medications, anti-anxiolytics that are maybe better or longer term anti-anxiety medications. There's no such thing as magic, or I would be in Hawaii and I'd have that shit trademarked and I would not be working multiple hours per day. So not that trazodone and gabapentin and some other commonly used pre-visit pharmaceuticals or behavior medications can't be helpful, but that needs to be in addition to behavior modification, setting up the environment to be comfortable, actually assessing, again, this is my little rant, but actually assessing the animal. So for example, a caregiver tells me their dog or cat is experiencing separation anxiety. That's a diagnosis. I understand that the client is stressed out or that two cats are fighting, because this is something I commonly see. And I understand that the client's stressed out. I completely recognize that that's a challenge, but then a possible medication may be prescribed, maybe. And then once I talk to the client, I realize that no actual data or information was taken as far as, hey, can you share some videos or can I refer you to a behavior professional or a veterinary behaviorist to kind of figure this out. It's more like your cat's exhibiting stress. The client said it. We're not finding out why. I always would say, what makes you feel like your cat is exhibiting separation mm-hmm. anxiety? What behaviors are you noting? Let's get a video mm-hmm. and talk through it versus my cat's stressed. They hate my other cat, even though they probably don't have enough resources and a lot of other things that we could easily address. So sorry, my little rants, but Stephen's correct. We'll go back to Stephen.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, always start with behavior modification, right? Like that is what we want to start with. And then we can progress through the medications. I don't really care if you start with CBD or trazodone or gabapentin first. Like, but first, let's start with behavior modification, a real assessment, see what's going on environmentally, and then we can start looking at these other things. I'm not saying to not use them, but to expect them to be the thing that is going to fix the problem, I think is really naive and dangerous.
And a lot of clients have naturally, guys, a lot of clients, we need to be aware, have that perception. Society mm-hmm. has that perception. Mm-hmm. So we need to recognize that and say, just be honest with the client. They will listen. All my clients are amazing and are super open to learning more and understanding. And when I give them that analogy that there's no magic pill, or when their cats start to get along and they're like, oh, it's magic, I remind them, this is not magic. We've mm-hmm. worked really hard. This is working at each cat's pace, ruling out and addressing medical issues, blah, 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 blah. No magic, no magic. Magic is mm-hmm. fun, but it's not curing or resolving managing behavior issues. Anyways, sorry.
No, I completely agree. And you know, the other kind of interesting thing too is like, there's two different realms of using cannabinoids, in particular CBD dominant or forward products, compared to things like cannabis that has a lot more THC in it. THC can actually heighten anxiety. That's why you might have friends or family that have used cannabis recreationally or medicinally, and they're like, I get really stressed out or scared is often a word I hear when people
paranoia
are using
is a common
paranoia yeah. using THC, right? Like, and I use every single day, and sometimes I will get a variety where I'm like, I'm freaking out a little bit on this. So THC is, my point is there are two different realms of utilizing cannabinoids for those that are interested in using it for like behavior related issues. There's the realm of utilizing high doses and formulations of various cannabinoids and terpenes, very, very important, that will cause a sedative effect, which is masking the actual problem, right? Like, we do that intentionally on 4th of July or car rides, whatever. It has its place, I think. I don't know. Does it? Are you judging me?
I would never judge you, but
no, judge me. That's
just
fine.
To be clear. So what Stephen is saying, that some will have a sedative effect, and there is a point to, though, that having that effect in some context. I'll be honest, in any context where there's anxiety involved, the goal should be reducing anxiety. And for example, this is why, if many of you are aware or have heard, acepromazine prescribed to address anxiety is very concerning. And because it's not anti-anxiolytic, it has none of those properties. So actually what's happening is the dog may be frozen or sedated, where from the client's perspective, again, client's perception, everyone, mm-hmm. or someone that may not understand body language, they may assess that as the dog is relaxed.
Yeah.
When actually the dog is sedated and still feeling all the fear, which that is some dark ass shit. Anyways, yes. So that's
that 100% that. And then there are the more realistic users using lower chronic dosing. So as far as mechanism of action, when it comes to behavior modification or anxiety and stress in people and in animals, CBD, the way it works in the brain is it helps process and store memories in the brain in a more efficient way. There's even a little bit of evidence for exogenous or cannabinoids that we're getting from these plants, changing the way our brains went. So this is like in neonates and developing fetuses, in animals and people, helps with synaptic development and synaptic pruning, meaning it's changing the wiring of your brain in early life. And your body produces what are called endocannabinoids. So these are the molecules that your body produces that structurally are very, very similar to CBD and THC and some of these other compounds that we get from plants. So your body produces these naturally, and that's why our bodies can be affected by smoking, eating, consuming of some sort things from hemp or marijuana plants. So it's very different. Like, if you want to use CBD for helping this animal process a traumatic or stressful event so that they will be better equipped for that event in the future, that makes a lot of sense to me. But that is going to take time and dedication and working with that animal, still with behavior modification, and not just assume that this dosing is going to fix things. Does that make sense?
No, definitely. And I think both me and Steven have come across this a lot, and I'm sure many of us have, because we want, I call them calming aids, right? The more calming aids, which again, aids, one part. So this might be feel-away Adaptyl, a thunder shirt, minimizing triggers, like, you know, what we can do in that moment to decrease the stress. And this can be gabapentin or another pre-visit pharmaceutical. But in most cases, I could, both of us could see how CBD could be helpful, or cannabinoids could be help. Language matters. He is correct.
It does.
Could be helpful for that. But real talk, there's basically no evidence to support it. And in the way it's being used, unfortunately, and marketed, people are being misled that it is a magic bullet or silver bullet. It's a magical thing. It'll help your dog. You don't need to decrease the triggers or minimize the sound, whatever it may be. You don't have to do behavior mod. You don't have to do things in the environment to keep the dog more comfortable, or cat. You just give them this CBD. Yeah. And that doesn't exist for anything, even with evidence-based anti-anxiety meds. And like I tell all my clients, I'm not saying that in the future, because there's a lot of amazing research happening, and veterinary medicine, as Steven knows, finally started kind of taking this seriously more recently, which allows us to have a lot more opportunities to get more evidence and more information. But right now, we really don't have much on behavior. And even though that's how it's often marketed by unregulated distributors, real talk, we don't have a lot of evidence, and we have a lot of evidence-based calming aids. So why don't we use those instead? But as far as utilizing it for pain management as a multimodal approach, because I know I mentioned ACE before, and I can't remember if I said ACE promazine as a solo agent, because it can be utilized with other anti-anxiolytics to help decrease fear and stress. So again, I just want to be clear about that. But as a solo agent, not recommended to address fear and anxiety, because I know we're kind of talking about a lot of different things.
Yeah. And, you know, the interesting thing when it comes to like using cannabinoids for things like pain, or that animal that is undergoing cancer treatment of some sort, or that animal, I'll save this example because I think it's a really cool study.
Yeah.
Is if you're using cannabinoids for those kinds of things, there might be perceived behavioral change, or it's affecting the behavior because you're actually treating the pain, which is actually the underlying issue that might make that animal a little bit more aggressive or sensitive or anxious.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So
I see underlying pain, guys, in more than probably 60, 70% of my cat cases, and probably 40 to 50. I know I actually need to start keeping track, and someone needs to give me funding so I could do funding for this, but probably 40 to 50% of my behavior cases. And I tend to see severe, so aggression towards other animals in the home, aggression towards people, resource guarding, all of these things. And I'm not saying it's always, but the amount pain contributes or completely causes the chief complaint that the caregiver has is very common. So that is a really good point, Stephen, because I think managing pain multimodally is something that we need to do. And sometimes part of that is seeing a change in behavior for the better. But we all know physical and mental health are intertwined, but not everyone is aware of that. So people could definitely misperceive the pain being treated as it helped the animal's anxiety. And by treating the pain, you are, or managing the pain, you are minimizing the anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not truly, we could go down this rabbit hole, guys. Woo! But you guys know what we mean, because we've obviously talked about it at length.
Yes, that. And then, you know, the other kind of interesting thing I was going to throw out there is you had mentioned that we don't have very good evidence in veterinary medicine yet, and it's still kind of rearing its head as far as, you know, utilizing these cannabinoids for various different things. The big thing that I really, really, really want to put out there, and again, it doesn't necessarily make me shy away from trying things,
right?
But the more and more data that we have, it's looking like each type of condition that we may have. So say something like osteosarcoma cancer in a dog. It's going to need, and we know that CBD will kill cancer in a petri dish. We know that. It's a fact.
Yeah.
However, in a living animal, it's looking like we are going to need a very specific formula, a very specific ratio of these different cannabinoids. So whether it's CBD, CBDA, CBG, CBC, all these hundreds of different phytocannabinoids, we're going to need a very specific formula for each condition. And I think that's going to be true when it comes to behavioral issues as well. So not only do we have to think about the cannabinoids, so things like CBD, THC, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, we also have these other smelly components to hemp and cannabis plants known as terpenes. And terpenes are essential oils. And I know this sounds a little woo-woo and I don't want to get too crazy, but there is evidence for certain terpenes or these essential oils from plants showing therapeutic benefits. So like one in particular is linalool.
Okay.
Here's my little quiz. What scent do we often like purchasing candles or lotions that's calming? Lavender. So you know what lavender is, what the main terpene is? It's linalool.
I did not know about this.
So that smell that you smell from lavender is linalool.
Okay.
And there actually is data in animals.
There is. Yeah.
And human babies actually for circumcision, which is kind of weird.
Oh, that's interesting.
Using these essential oils, these terpenes, which are considered GRAS by the FDA. Again, another funny pun. GRAS is an acronym for generally referred to as safe. So they are in food products that we eat every single day. So these terpene profiles are also going to have a therapeutic effect, especially in combination with these phytocannabinoids. So we talk about multimodal pain management plans, multimodal behavioral medications, right? Like you want to use things together to hopefully decrease overall dose and mitigate some of the negative side effects. These terpenes are going to be super important also. So linalool is one of them that I like to see if in a product, if I want to suggest it for an animal that is stressed out or even painful, because linalool, at least topically, is also quite effective as a local anesthetic. And then we also have other things, like one of my favorite terpenes is myrcene, which you can extract from not only cannabis plants, but you can also get this from hops. You can get this from several different fruit plants. This particular terpene can be reversed with yohimbine and naloxone. So if it's reversed with yohimbine and naloxone, what receptors is it sitting at, right? Like you're sitting at alpha receptors, which is a receptor that we target with things like dexmedetomidine or Celio,
right,
that we put on the gums. We know that opioids aren't necessarily like an anxiolytic, but if we can decrease pain, we might get a little bit of sedation as well, and decreasing overall anxiety if you're decreasing pain.
Right.
So these terpenes are also really important. Overall point is it's looking like each specific type of condition is going to need a very specific formula of these terpenes and these cannabinoids to be most effective. And then we also have to think of like pharmacogenetics, which is that other rabbit hole I kind of mentioned. You know, like here's my example. This is kind of a basic example, I feel like talking to you, but you know, some dogs will get sedated on Benadryl.
Yeah.
Other dogs in certain breeds like labs will get crazy on Benadryl. Yeah. And that comes down to pharmacogenetics, right? So we also see the same thing with cannabinoids. So it's not one size fits all for sure. And we might have to find that right formula, which can be costly, trying all these different products, which aren't necessarily cheap. And please don't buy the cheap ones. Holy cow. Well, I mean, don't buy the expensive ones too. I did a study in 2020 that was published, and we found multiple products that had such high levels of lead and arsenic and some of these other contaminants that they legally should not be sold, because they go outside the USP, the safe consumable limits of these contaminants. So point is, oh my God, I keep saying that, is we need to be cautious and we need to be realistic about these things, and understand that, it's not gonna be a silver bullet. You're probably gonna have to try multiple products before you find that one that works, or maybe it's not gonna work at all. And then we also have to consider more is not necessarily better. We were talking before we started the podcast, you know, CBD can actually be a stimulant at certain doses. The higher the dose, CBD can actually be a stimulant. At a certain point, you can actually get past that stimulatory phase and go into more sedation. But that's also where I start to worry about other organs and what we're doing to them when you're giving them this much of anything. You know, like everything's toxic at a certain level, even water, right? Like we know people can be toxic, water can be toxic to people if you drink too much. It's hard to get there, but it's possible. And I keep seeing practitioners and pet owners like, oh, well, let's just increase the dose. That's not necessarily the answer for these products. And just because they're natural, quote unquote, doesn't necessarily make them safe.
Yeah, I think that that's a really good point. So unfortunately, it's exciting that the human world and the vet world, the human world, we're all the same world, but you guys know, are starting to take cannabinoids. Because again, I think that this is a really exciting, a new effective thing that we can utilize with different things. But with that came marketing, capitalism, marketing. And unfortunately, it's not regulated for shit. So literally I can have, I mean, this sounds scary, but it's there. I could be at like a fruit market and buy my CBD. And again, as you guys probably noticed, we do not recommend it for fear, stress, anything related to behavior, because I think there's a lot of potential there, but we have things that we know do work, and let's focus on those things while we're getting more information. But as far as people purchasing this, and Stephen kind of touched on this, I don't think people realize, a lot of us think it's just a safe thing. It's fine. I'll try it, whether it's $60 or $10. But actually, there are products that either won't do anything, which isn't helpful, and that might actually minimize someone going to get the correct diagnostics or correct things to get that animal feeling better, but also it can actually be detrimental. Like he mentioned arsenic and all these other things that can be found. And again, it's not regulated. So literally I could just give you a jar and put a CBD label or a cannabinoid label and say to treat whatever. And that's what's happening. So for people, animal professionals out there who are interested in these products for pain, because I am a huge fan of using them and have in quite a few of the clients I work with, along with the veterinarian. It's a team effort, everybody, always. But let's say they wanted to look into some cannabinoid products. I know this is another broad question, but are there some practical tips or red flags, questions that they can ask themselves when they're searching for a cannabinoid product for pain management or where they're more indicated for?
Yeah. So my colleague, Liz Houston, and I, who I know you've done some consulting with for her cats, we've put together a list of products that we've assessed their certificate of analysis for. So we've asked a manufacturer for the specific piece of paper that's done by a third party, has to be an accredited third party, looking at the concentrations of the cannabinoids, the various different cannabinoids in the product. We're looking for pesticide, fungicide contamination. We're looking for the chemicals that they use to harvest these compounds from the plants to make sure there's not a lot of residual chemicals left over in the product. We're looking for mycotoxin testing, which mycotoxin in the brain, that's really interesting. You have some really fun behavioral things there. Bacterial contamination, etc. Elemental analysis. So we've put together this list of products that we've assessed and we keep assessing as far as the quality of them. And also on our website, which, can I say my the website?
Please say your website.
So vetcanacademy.com. We have a resources page that tells you how to read a certificate of analysis. And basically our rule of thumb is, you as a pet owner or the veterinary professional should be able to ask the manufacturer for a complete certificate of analysis. A lot of them will just send you like the total CBD concentration in there, which I don't really care because I really want to see all the other stuff.
Yeah.
So on our website, we have like what should be on a certificate of analysis, how to read this, and essentially, if the company is unwilling to provide you a complete certificate of analysis, don't use it. Don't buy it. And certainly the list that we put together is not comprehensive. I mean, there's thousands of products out there and we don't have time to assess thousands of products unless you want to pay us a bunch of money. We're glad to probably do it for that. But, you know, if you want a short list of products that at least we've assessed, that is available on the website as well. And I think that's the best thing that we can do, because disappointingly, I believe it was last week, if not 2 weeks ago, the FDA decided again to not regulate CBD products, which is kind of disappointing, because if they were to regulate them as dietary supplements, that's a category that they were trying to potentially regulate them under, there would be a little bit more scrutiny as far as how these products are manufactured and certainly labeled. And when it comes to kind of the legality of these things, so in general, hemp-derived CBD products are legal in the United States. That's been legal since 2018. Arguably, you could say they've always been legal. It was just better defined in 2018. However, when these products, or any product, not just a CBD product, these animal supplements are being marketed, if they make a medical claim, like if it says good for stress relief or good for pain relief, if they're not FDA approved, that's an illegal product. It's not illegal because there's CBD in there. It's illegal because a manufacturer is making a claim that is not supported by any evidence. Right. So I also get a little bit skeeved out by the companies that are like, good for XYZ, when I'm like, you have zero data on this. There are like, I don't know, less than 10 companies that have actually done clinical studies with their products. So I'm like, okay, those companies can say that because they're using their specific formula for this specific thing. But all these other companies that are trying to use these other companies' studies as evidence for their product, I don't buy it. Well, I can't buy it because I know better, but that's my job to know better. But it's a little bit of the Wild West still. And I hate to sound cliche because I know that was a term used when the CBD stuff first blew up, you know, like 6 years ago.
But it's still a very relevant term.
It is. It really, really is.
And as far as if there is a veterinarian, because I think every state is a little different and I have not kept up with this as much as you probably have. Because I know as a technician, right, technically it's a little easier because it's considered somewhat of a nutraceutical, right?
Yeah.
But from a veterinary standpoint, or even veterinary professionals, technicians, assistants, if they were interested in purchasing cannabinoids for their painful pet, or a veterinarian prescribing them, because I know those two things look different, what should they know besides what we talked about as far as, of course, like, hey, some general red flags, go to their website. It's amazing. It'll help.
When it comes to veterinary professionals talking about these things, as you mentioned, they do kind of fall in this nutraceutical category. So I'm not really concerned about veterinary assistants, veterinary technicians really talking about it. I know certain states like California is trying to formalize it a little bit more, with the exception of South Dakota, Idaho, and I think South Carolina. I'm pretty confident about talking about these products with clients in the practice. I have little concern over that. I would caution veterinary professionals to not carry products that are making these medical claims on the label. Again, it doesn't Definitely. Have to do with Yeah. the legality of CBD itself. It has to do with the legality of a company making false medical claims because they have no data submitted to the FDA and they're not FDA approved. When it comes to another word that you said, because as we mentioned earlier, words are important. Prescribe is a very contentious word when it comes to these things. Mm. Prescribe is also a very contentious word when we're talking about things like glucosamine or SAMe or these right. other kind of nutraceutical things. We legally cannot prescribe them. We are dispensing them. We are selling them, but we cannot prescribe them. And even if a veterinarian were to write in the record, prescribe CBD at X milligrams twice a day for this patient, when the veterinarian uses that word prescribe, and say that case went south and they got reported to the veterinary medical board or whomever, because they use that word prescribe, and prescribe has a definition meaning it will treat something, you just shot yourself in the foot. So never, ever use the word prescribe when it comes to talking about dispensing or utilizing CBD products. And what's interesting is I always get this pushback, even from regulators when I'm like debating regulators who are supposed to know this stuff, about states where medical cannabis is legal. If you read the legislation in states where medical cannabis can be dispensed, there is no word of prescribe in there. It's just commonly understood that they are prescribing cannabis.
Gotcha.
But there's no prescription. There's no prescription, which is kind of interesting. It's a recommendation.
I know there was a lot going on with this, like you said, the Wild West 5-6 years ago, even 4-3 years ago. But I think every state is different, but I'm going to ask you to verify. But when it comes to veterinarians, because again, you're right, like when I would be working in GP, we wrote dispense glucosamine in the soap mm-hmm. notes and things like that. If they were to dispense the cannabinoids, is there any state right now? Because I think a lot of vets want to utilize these products and they're really afraid to. Mm-hmm. But I know every state has changed and I have not kept up with that. What is that looking like right now?
Yeah. So the two most confident states I have right now are Nevada and California. California okay. and Nevada have very clear language. And this is where we, as very cautious creatures, as veterinary professionals, sometimes it gets the best of us because there is no explicit language saying, yes, veterinary assistants and veterinary technicians and veterinarians can discuss this stuff. It's legal to sell out of your practice. Because that language doesn't exist, there often tends to be this fear of, oh my God, we can't do it, which is actually not true at all. If the law doesn't mention it or explicitly or allude or in the spirit of deny or describe something as illegal, it does not inherently mean it's illegal if it's not described at all, which is frustrating because people want that clarity. I'm like, but you also don't have clarity for all this other crap that you're doing, which is very, very bad and concerning. Yeah. So California and Nevada certainly have the best clarity when it comes to selling and using these products and having these discussions. What's interesting is, I don't know, like 5 years ago, I spoke at AVMA, multiple lectures on this topic that were overflow. But before the lecture started, AVMA had put out these little Q&A cards saying like, all the stuff they're talking about, you can't really mention ever and blah, blah, blah. Which is interesting because at the time, AVMA was like, no, you can't talk about CBD stuff at all. But AVMA has actually changed their stance on this recently, actually like 2 years ago. And they said, it is our responsibility to have these conversations with pet owners when they're asking about CBD, because we are supposed to prevent no harm. And by saying that we're not allowed to talk to you about it, but they can go to the gas station and talk to someone that has zero credentials at all, is breaking our oath and totally irresponsible. So 100%. In every state, I can say this with confidence, in every state, you are allowed to talk to the client about the safety and the information that we have, which is very different than dispensing and selling these products. So it's two different ballparks. And again, with the exception of those like three states, I have no concern about selling these products out of the clinic. In fact, we actually had the DEA come into my clinic like 4 years ago, and they walked past my shelf of CBD and stuff. I was like, oh my God, here we go. And they looked at me like, huh, interesting. Can you show us the lockbox? And we got fined for like having our schedule twos with our schedule threes or something like that, but nothing about the CBD. So I'm not concerned about that as long as it's done responsibly.
And I think that I love that you mentioned that stance, because I think we have to, even if we're a little uncomfortable, real talk, this shit is everywhere. And it's unfortunately, I know many of us in vet med, in ER, in GP, me even as a behavior consultant, we are seeing the detrimental effects of people purchasing these items, meaning well, not knowing, uneducated consumers being marketed to. This is a thing. We're here now. It's been a thing. So it's, even if it's not something that you will necessarily want to dispense, we need to be able to educate clients like I do. Again, I'm by no means a Steven on this topic, hence why he gets to do all the amazing things and wrote a amazing textbook, which I actually utilize for reference more often than I'd like to admit. but I do what I can to educate my clients. And if I don't know, I send them to a resource, or I look in Steven's textbook. I send them to a resource that may know, or tell them, hey, maybe let's just not use that. But I also see a lot of, like you said, I'm sure I've been in that position before too, where as a vet tech or veterinarians who they're afraid, because there was so like no clarity and there's a lot of fear mongering, and it's less, but it was a lot 5 years ago, surprisingly, over cannabinoids, but that's where we were. So a client would come, like you said, ask, they might even come with the products they bought from the gas station, and we would say, we can't help you.
Yeah.
And that is just not okay.
Yeah. I think it's funny because I remember hearing so much when I was doing a lot of lecturing on this. A lot of veterinarians in particular saying there's no evidence. And I'm like, can you show me the evidence for this supplement? Can you show me the evidence at the time? And I don't know, maybe this is a trigger for you. Can you show me the evidence for safe and effective dosing of gabapentin in these animals? You know what I mean? Like, just because something is FDA approved, again, doesn't necessarily mean there's really good evidence to be using it in the ways that we're using it. And again, just because we have this stigma against marijuana, this war on drugs thing, this stigma has been pervasive in the acceptance of these legitimately therapeutic compounds that we can get from this plant when used appropriately. I mean, the other comparison to that is starting to get stigmatized now is opiates, right? Like,
right.
Opiates were a drug before we medicalized them. I don't know if that's a word, but we medicalized them for our benefit, right? Like, I think we're kind of in that same period when it comes to cannabinoids, except these are a lot less dangerous than opioids.
Right.
So yeah, it's interesting how the conversation has evolved. But again, there's still a lot of things to be concerned about when utilizing these products in animals.
Right. And that's where you may not be comfortable, because that's another thing. Yes, it's a nutraceutical, essentially. But if you aren't comfortable with the products or cannabinoids in general, you probably aren't the best person to be referring to them. But there are resources like the website that Stephen shared, and I'll share some others in the show notes, where you can get that information. None of us know everything. That's real life. When someone tells me they don't know something, I always reinforce them, because humans are weird about thinking they know everything. And that's really dangerous, whether we're talking about vet med or other humans or whatever it may be. So I think it's okay to not be comfortable with dispensing these as well. But we do have to understand the basics to be able to help address what our clients are being fed.
Right.
Essentially, because guys, it's everywhere.
And I mean, one thing I hope to break with this particular topic and so many other things is there was a study in human medicine that was assessing how long it takes for a novel therapy to become conventionally accepted by a majority of medical professionals as not just like woo-woo, or this is too new, I don't want to use it, or I just don't know enough about it. Do you know what that number is? How many years?
Oh gosh. I'm going to guess. It's sad. 15.
It's 17 years.
Oh, I was.
So.
Yeah, that's a long time. Yeah.
Yeah. So what's sad is like something new comes on the market. There may be some potential. There may not be some potential, but it's sad that it takes 17 years and all those patients in between suffering when we just need to maybe get a little bit more confident in our own ability to research and try new things. But again, do it safely. Because I would hate for this to take 17 years, especially with the evidence that we have for pain in particular, for this to be a conventional therapy when the data is better than a lot of the drugs that we've been using for years. Tramadol, for example, right? Like,
don't get me started.
People are using tramadol forever for pain and dogs. And then it's like, oh, we have studies from 15 years ago saying it doesn't work in dogs, yet people are still doing it. Like, I don't know. It's just sad to me that we can accept some things, but not others. And in the meantime, our patients suffer.
No, I think that's a very well-spoken way of saying it, because again, all my listeners, we are trying to do the best for the animals in our care, whether we're working in a vet clinic or in an animal shelter. And we love what we do for a living, but I know me and Stephen definitely agree here, but part of it is always learning and always trying new things. But also, I love Stephen. He's a genius. Don't get me wrong. But I'm not going to take anything everyone says for fact anytime ever. Even I'm going to ask Stephen questions. I may ask for some evidence. I may ask again. So I'm going to critically think and apply it to that individualized patient. So that's a really important part of vet med. And that's honestly, I think it's super fun. I love that part, but it's not as simple as saying, hey, Stephen says this is great for pain. Stephen's amazing and very intelligent, but he's also providing more resources. And we're just trying to open your minds to using cannabinoids and where you can learn more and break some of those common myths. But it's all about critically thinking. Each patient's an individual, and each caregiver is an individual, to be fair. Some caregivers may have a negative association with CBD as a whole. And I see that with anti-anxiety medications a lot. And I discuss the stigma. I break that because I'm all about mental health. I share that I'm on mood stabilizers and they're great. I'm way better for it. Everyone knows that. But again, once you break that with a client, they start laughing and they're like, I have so much stress. Because who the fuck doesn't have stress? But anyways, I think that that is a wonderful way to kind of sum it up. And obviously, this is a big part of your life. So this may be like a dream question, but what do you hope for in vet med specifically to be the future for cannabinoids in animal care, essentially?
Yeah. So I think my hope right now is a little bit more reserved than I think people may think it is. So as much as I'm an advocate of using cannabinoids as therapies for various different things, as much as I consume weed every single day, I am hopeful that there will be more investment into clinical studies sussing out what ratios of these cannabinoids are going to be effective for certain things. That's my big interest. And my other hope is that there will be a lot more investment into not just dog clinical studies, but feline clinical studies, because we have 9 pharmacokinetic studies in dogs, which is studies looking at the dosing and safety of CBD products in dogs. And we have 2 in cats. So that's unfortunate. So I hope this other, you know, number 2 most common household pet will get the same attention as our canine friends. I think that's a little bit more reserved than if people were thinking, because I think everyone's like, oh my God, you just want to give everything CBD. No, I don't.
You just want us to invest and explore.
Invest and not be scared of trying, but also being very mindful of it too. Like you said, like actually asking for evidence. You know, I have a little bit of a persona of being intimidating to some people or being sassy, which I certainly am. I'm not going to deny that. But I certainly respect people more when they ask me for evidence, you know, like. And I'm not going to be an asshole and be like, well, I wrote the book on it. Just trust me. No, I respect you more when you push back and you ask for evidence, because I am happy to provide that to you. And I hope other people will do that also.
And for people who are very interested to learn more, or even I do think that this is just a great, because this isn't a topic that honestly a lot of us aren't comfortable with, because even in vet med, they weren't even really, larger veterinary conferences weren't even exposing us to more education on it until fairly recently in the really big picture of things. Steven did contribute, which I'll have him talk about a little bit, a textbook on this. And I highly recommend it for, again, if you're more interested to learn more and start dispensing it, but also as a reference, because it can be really overwhelming to learn every new product. And I recognize that, but it is also our responsibility to be aware of these products to help educate our caregivers. So could you tell us a little bit about your amazing book?
Yeah. So we have my co-editors, Liz Houston, Kathy Kramer, who's a veterinarian up in Canada, and Dr. Jamie Gaynor, a veterinarian in Colorado. Dr. Catherine Kramer, she's boarded in clinical practice, so focus on canine feline medicine. And Dr. Jamie Gaynor is a boarded anesthesiologist. Liz Houston, who I think has been on the show.
Oh, yeah, a few times. You know, she likes to talk. We do.
So she does love to talk. She lives a mile away from me, and I can hear her talking from here. So she's specialized in internal medicine, emergency critical care, and myself, I'm also specialized in pain management and anesthesia. So we're the editors, and we have 30 other authors that contributed to that book and broken down into, I think, 14 chapters. Don't quote me on that. But it's a textbook published by Springer Nature, which is, you know, I am going to toot my horn there, because that is like the upper echelon of publishers that you want to get published by, as far as scientific reference material. A book entitled Cannabis Therapy and Veterinary Medicine came out in 2021. And I did a post kind of a while ago now especially at the pace that the evidence is coming out regarding these compounds in animals. So every textbook, when it's published, is about 3 to 4 years outdated.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Which just kills me inside, because I always want everything to be updated as possible. But I was reflecting the other day on the stuff that we put in this textbook, and it's still relevant, which I'm really happy about. I think we wrote it in such a way that it has maintained its relevancy despite new evidence coming out. You know, we had put postulations we kind of assessed postulations of where things will be going, and thankfully they turned out correct. So I'm really proud of it. You know, I don't plan to have children, and I tell my mom, like, the books that I write are your children. So here's your legacy.
I'm sure she's proud. So thank you so much for being here and sharing all your amazing knowledge. I always like to end by asking my guests, what is something that makes you happy currently? This could be your adorable husband who I saw walk in and give you a precious kiss. Or it could be the weeds you smoked yesterday.
How about a combination of my adorable husband smoking weed and then cuddling together?
Oh, I love it.
And then eating like a whole pack of Oreos. So that's a whole other
self-care, guys. Do your thing. I ate a bag of spicy chili Doritos yesterday. Don't at me. Anyway. Well, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I always love chatting to Steven, and thank him for being on the show to share his knowledge. Of course, that's just the tip of the iceberg as far as cannabinoids and cannabis therapy and veterinary medicine. I'm really excited for the future of cannabis therapy and veterinary medicine, and there are already great applications where we can utilize cannabis therapy in animal care, one not being anxiety, which we discussed on the show, maybe in the future, but not right now. So I highly recommend checking out Cannabis Therapy and Veterinary Medicine, A Complete Guide, Steven and Liz Houston, among others, textbook about this, because our clients are purchasing these items. It's not regulated. It's a little confusing to us sometimes as well, as we're learning about these products in our field. So it's important for us to know what's going on so we can help educate our clients, but also ourselves. I hope you guys enjoyed